Okay, we're going to kick off. Thanks for coming. I hope you're enjoying the food. I think it's the best food I've had so far at conference, so well done to the organisers. I hope that the quality of the discussion will be as good. I'm sure it will be. So I'm Hamish Sanderson. I'm going to chair this session. I'm from Labour Business, as it says up there. Just in case you don't know who we are, Labour Business is the only business membership organisation affiliated to the Labour Party. Some of you may remember we used to be called the Labour Finance and Industry Group, LFIG, but not everybody knew what that meant. Some people thought it was a fruit. So we rebranded a couple of years ago, but we are the same as before. One of the 22 socialist societies. I'd like to have that later, but I can't eat and talk at the same time. My mother told me not. So we are, if you like, the bridge between the party and the business community. And actually, goes back quite a long way to Harold Wilson, 1972, set up what was then very catchily called the 1972 Industry Committee. Eventually went on to become LFIG and now Labour Business. And the idea behind this organisation, remember, 1972, Labour's in opposition, is that if we don't have a conversation with business, if we don't listen to business, why should they listen to us? So we do a number of things from business engagement, roundtables, forums all over the country. And of course, this is just one example. We're very happy to be part of it. Then leading from that evidence base into policy development, working with the front bench teams, particularly Treasury, obviously, and business on policy development. We're quite involved in the business policies around last year's general election manifesto. And thirdly, media campaigning, I guess I would call it, whether mainstream media or social media, to get across the point that the Tories are not the only party of business, that actually Labour is the party of businesses as well as the party of workers. And we have a new slogan. We use it in a bit of a tribute to Harold Wilson, because you remember he said he wanted to make Labour the natural party of government. So we're making Labour the natural party of business. That is our little speech bubble. So it's really good to be involved in a topic which, in terms of our various policy groups, we put right up there, very, very close to the top. Because clearly, without fair taxation and enforced payments for taxes, we will not have the revenues to do the things that most of us in this room, I imagine, want us to do in terms of public services, whether it's hospitals or schools or transport. So taxation is a very important topic, and I suppose the focus today on business taxation in a digital world is absolutely at the heart of that fair taxation debate, because I will allow the speakers to define the problem, but it does seem to many of us, I think, that there are some large tech companies, I won't mention any names at all, but you know who they are, who aren't necessarily paying what we would consider fair taxation. And that's not necessarily because they're bad or evil or whatever you want to use by way of adjectives to describe their behaviour, but because there are some gaps in the taxation system itself. And obviously we want to hear from the Labour Party what they will be doing to address those issues. So I'm hoping that our speakers can help us define what the problem is, what is that shortfall in terms of what people would consider fair taxation, and what could an incoming Labour government do to fix that, if anything. I think the answer is there's a lot that we could do. So that's all I really need to say, I think, by way of introduction. I'll get back to my lunch. And we will take the speakers in the following order. So first is Helen Miller from the Institute for Fiscal Studies. I'll let Helen explain her role there. And I think we all know what the IFS is, but you could perhaps tell us how you've got involved into this particular area of interest. Followed by Glyn Fullerlove, Deputy President of the Chartered Institute of Taxation. Again, I'll leave you, Glyn, to tell us a bit more about your interest in this subject. And then last but not least, Annalise Dodds, who is Shadow Financial Secretary to the Treasury. So that's a senior role on the front bench Treasury team, but obviously with particular responsibility for taxation. So we're very pleased to have you with us, Annalise, and we will hear you last. We'll have then plenty of time for questions and discussions, I hope. I think we'll probably take all of you in a row, and then we can have a full debate afterwards. And I'm told that we'll finish probably about 5 to 2, so there'll still be hot food out there. Annalise has to go off to a cycling event, so she's got to rush off and put her leggings on. So we won't watch while she does that. But there will still be food out there if you didn't get a chance to eat before the event. So, again, welcome from me. Thank you to the organisers, particularly George here, and modestly enough, has put it all together. And I will call on Helen Miller to speak first. Helen.
Great, thank you. I'm going to stand up so I can see you all. I hope I've not got my slides too much. So, as Hamish said, I'm from the IFS. We are an independent, non-political research institute, and we've been thinking about the design of taxes, all taxes, not just corporate tax, for decades. It's our 50th birthday next year, so we're doing some time. That's what I'll say about ours, I can crack on with the talk. So as Hamish kind of alluded to, it's pretty easy to get angry about corporate tax. We've all read the articles about multinationals and been left feeling like the system isn't fair. What I want to do with my 10 minutes today is set out why I think it's difficult to know what to do about that and why there aren't any easy fixes, and hopefully you'll kickstart a debate about what we can do. But to start, obviously, we have to think about what we mean when we think about fair as it applies to business. Often the public debate is really about how businesses are paying, if they're paying their fair share relative to the rest of us. But that's a concept that actually much more naturally applies to people than to businesses. Businesses hand over about 87% of tax revenues to governments, but ultimately all taxes are paid by people. So when businesses are handing over VAT or income tax, we're all very aware that they're handing over taxes that ultimately are paid by workers or consumers. But the same is true for corporate tax. If you have higher corporate taxes, they have to come from either the incomes of shareholders and possibly from wages of workers or prices of consumers. And what's really frustrating as an economist is that I can't tell you exactly who pays corporation tax because it isn't something we can directly measure. So economists have done lots of work trying to estimate that, and I could talk about the evidence there. But kind of what I want to say for today is that we should have in the back of our minds that you can have relatively small companies with very rich individual shareholders, or you can have very large companies with a set of less well-off shareholders, including all of us as we invest in our pensions. So we can't think of taxing high-profit companies as completely synonymous with taxing rich people. And of course, there are other ways to tax rich people. Why am I highlighting this? Well, one reason is that I'm going to argue today that I don't think these concepts of fair share help us get very far in working out how to fix our corporate tax system. I think we can get further if instead we think about the kind of problems we have in our corporate tax system and the distortions it creates. So one set of distortions are around whether the tax system gives some firms a competitive advantage, whether the big tech giants are getting advantages relative to the high street retailers, for example. You can think of that as a form of fairness. But there are other distortions too, like about how our tax system incentivizes firms to shift profits and real activities. So what I'm going to try to do to show you why I've come to this conclusion that trying to tackle these problems rather than think about the bigger fair share issues is kind of a productive way to move forward. I'm going to try and set out at a higher level how our system works, and kind of a potted history of how we got here, and hopefully help all of you decide how you think we should be changing our system. So at its core, can you all see this map? At its core, corporate tax is pretty simple. If you imagine a firm that's all based in the UK, you basically, you know, take turnover, deduct costs, get profits and tax it. And of course, in reality, it's slightly more complicated than that. You have to write rules about what you can deduct, but it's a simple idea. Sadly, corporate tax gets quite a bit more complicated when you start having some activity offshore. So consider another simple example where you've put some production offshore. We can still work out global profits, but now we have to also work out how to share them between, in this case, the UK and China. And this is exactly the kind of example people had in mind in the 1920s when the League of Nations was trying to effectively work out how to share profits across countries. And countries had this realisation that it's in a country's own self-interest not to tax profits, the same profits, in all lots of different countries, basically because that deters companies from working across borders and ultimately impedes trade. So what they were trying to do is come up with a way to stop this taxation in every country while recognising that countries legitimately want to tax corporations and have a right to share in the base of corporations. So the trick was to write tax treaties that did that. And the kind of answer they came up with was something called transfer pricing, which again, if you take my simple example, just says, imagine these, you know, let's play the thought experiment that says they're two separate companies and ask how much would the UK firm have to pay the Chinese firm if they're a separate company to get their goods produced. That's called an arm's length price, and that basically dictates how much profit flows to China. Which kind of sounds okay, except these arm's length prices don't actually exist. We have to estimate them. And that's genuinely hard, even in this kind of system. But of course, nowadays, actually, companies have production in lots of countries, and it's not just production of tangible goods, it's also lots of intangible assets. This is now the norm. So the iPhone has become the iconic example of this. Everyone knows that the original smartphone was designed and developed in the US, and no one is surprised to hear that it was assembled in China. But actually, its production sucks in components and kind of activities from literally around the globe. So, for example, we get displays from Japan, sensors from South Korea, and gyroscopes from a French-Italian company based in Switzerland. And that's not just Apple as a special case. The UN estimates that 80% of world trade is now linked to these kind of multinational production networks. So you might have heard this system described as, we try to tax activity where the value is created, which is broadly true. We're trying to work out where the value is on this map, except not in some key cases. Think about intellectual properties. I think brands, designs, patents. Then we are trying to work out how much value is created by those assets, but then we tax them in the location the asset is held. And that might be the same location as where the R&D happened or where the design happened, but it might not be. And that's one of the reasons where we often see a disconnect between where people think the profits should be intuitively and where they actually are. And one of the difficulties is actually intangible assets are pretty easy for companies to move. So there are kind of two takeaways I'd like you to have from this. One is that this is a complex system. There is plenty of room for genuine disagreement about how you should share value across these countries. And of course, on top of that genuine disagreement, companies can try to move their activities to reduce their tax. The second takeaway is that there's no reason our system has to be like this. It is like this for historical reasons, but you could think of it being a different way. So, for example, I haven't mentioned customers yet. Multinationals have customers all over the place. And one of the things been playing out in the press in recent years is when you find companies that have large sales in a country, but not large profits there. And that, for people, don't like that outcome. But, of course, that's the outcome our system was designed to give, so we shouldn't be too surprised that it's happening. And some people argue that the current system is fair because they say, well, if a company is doing production or activity in a country, they should be taxed there because they're using the local public goods and infrastructure. But of course, you can make the same arguments for where consumers are. If you're selling into a local market, you're also using infrastructure. You're probably also relying on the laws that protect your trademarks and so on. So this is why I said that I don't think this fairness and fair share, because there's a clear criteria for how to divvy up profits, because we could argue all sorts of different ways. We'd also notice I haven't think about digital yet, and we're in a digital session. Digital, if you think about taxing the big tech giants, has all the problems I've been describing, but often they're just harder. They're harder because more of the value comes from these intangible assets that's hard to measure, and it's hard to know how much value you're getting from those types of assets. But the issue you're seeing being increasingly discussed, and it's being discussed in tax circles, is increasingly about users. So you think of something like Facebook or Twitter. The value of Facebook and Twitter isn't just created in a factory, or it's not just created by intangible like software assets, it's also created by users. So if you follow the broad argument that we're trying to tax profits where value is created, maybe we should try and attach some profits to where users are. But that really makes it quite difficult to know what to do about that. So, how much value do I create for Twitter? Am I more valuable than you?
No.
Are we more valuable as a country than French users? And how does our value compare to the brand that Twitter's created or the software they're investing in? That's a really tricky, I don't even know where to start with really answering that properly. And of course, when we're thinking about users, they're everywhere. And all of the countries want a slice of that profit, including countries in which at the moment a firm hasn't even got a subsidiary in which the local government can try to tax. So this is kind of the challenge we face with our tax system. So, to wrap up, everyone agrees that the current system has problems, and not just specific implementation problems with how we're running the current rules, but kind of system-wide problems. There is no single right answer to the question of where value was created. We could have reasonable disagreement in this room, and I expect there is. On top of that, firms have an explicit incentive to shift profits and activity because of tax, and governments have an incentive to compete for that activity because everyone wants their jobs in their country, and we see governments competing. I've argued that I don't think fairness in the sense of how much different types of people should be paying gives us a very clear criteria for allocating profits across the globe. You could argue that tax is based on where the parent is, where the subsidiaries are, where the intangibles are, where consumers are, could be fair. And I suspect you'd all pick different preferences on that spectrum, so it doesn't really give us a way forward. I think more practically, we can try to find ways to reduce the distortions we currently have, including to competition. On that front, you basically have two choices. One is to keep adding patches. The OECD's been doing that in recent years. The UK's been putting in place more anti-avoidance measures. We could keep doing that, and we could try to find specific measures for digital to make, move more of the profits away from some other countries towards where users are. But I think we'd be it's unrealistic to think we're going to get a big, you know, surge in revenue from that, and we're certainly not going to fix all the underlying issues. Of course, another solution that I guess economists often favour is think about a whole new system with fewer problems. Of course, it's worth saying that there are plenty of alternative systems. By and large, they have alternative problems. But to give you one example, we can think about continuing to tax profits, but allocating them to the location of consumers. That kind of destination-based tax actually has quite a lot of merit because consumers in general are less mobile than firms. So in such a system, you'd remove the incentive for firms to be moving their activities around, and you're removing the incentive for governments to compete. But of course, the big thing to know there is that there are going to be winners and losers, and the countries that think that's fair tend to be those that will get more revenue as a result. So I think what we need to do to move the debate forward is at least start by recognising that we face some difficult choices, there aren't any easy answers, and we're probably going to be really picking the system that we're least unhappy with.
Well, thank you, Helen. It's great at Sunday lunchtime to have such a clear exposition of such a complex subject, and it's really useful to have that, I think, before we debate where we go next. So thank you for being so articulate and lucid on what is admittedly a difficult, complex subject. So we move on next to Glyn, Deputy President of the Chartered Institute of Taxation. Glyn, all yours.
Yep. Thank you very much, Helen, and thank you for everyone who's come today. Chartered Institute of Taxation is set up as an educational charity. We're a bit older than the IFS. We were set up in 1930, primarily to educate people to work in the tax system. We set quite fierce exams and then insist on people getting continuing professional development to maintain their qualification. And we see our role as obviously educating people to work in tax, but also trying to educate generally around the complex nature of all taxes, not only corporation tax, but across the whole spectrum. I'm the chair of the technical committee as well as the deputy president, and I think we paid for the food, which means I actually get to give you the real technical education this lunchtime. So I apologise for that. So I'm going to pick up hopefully where Helen left off. I'm going to a little bit more detail on corporation tax itself. And I should say, full disclosure, I've been working in corporation tax up until last Friday for the last 30 years. And for the last 10 or so years, I've worked in the telecoms, media and technology sector. For the last 7 years until last Friday, I worked for a company which derived about 50% of its income from digital products. But this is mainly business and academic information, which 10 years ago we'd sold books and pamphlets and leaflets and journals. Today it all goes out digitally. So it's that kind of digital as opposed to the Google.
Could you just reassure us that nothing terrible happened on Friday?
Yeah. No.
There was a transition further role.
I very amicably left my previous my employer because... being deputy president, obviously the next step is to become president. That happens next year. And I decided like that was incompatible with full-time employment.
Good, we're relieved to hear.
What is fair taxation? I think what is fair taxation? We've covered that mainly already through Helen. Corporation tax, and I think we've got a little bit of a debate within debate. A little bit of specificity around what the current Chancellor is proposing in relation to digital. Can corporation tax deliver any answers? And finally, is it even a tax problem at all? So what is fair taxation? I think essentially CIOT would broadly agree with the IFS on what that is, so I'm not going to step on that. Why we say it's a debate within a debate is because there's a lot going on around the digital sector that goes beyond tax. So such things as the use of people's personal data by large digital companies. The fact that bricks and mortar companies pay taxes that digital companies, by and large, don't pay. differences, you know, trying to actually define what is digital and what isn't. So, so there's a whole debate. So I think the tax debate is just one part of a wider debate, which sometimes colours what happens with it on the tax side. There is a perception of unfairness around corporation tax on digital companies. And I wanted to sort of put the phrase this or deal with this, imagining there was an incoming chancellor, maybe in November, if the Times this morning is to be believed. I guess thoughts of a snap election. So an incoming, say, Labour chancellor who comes to, say, somebody in the Treasury or HMRC, I don't think this person really exists, but say is the guru and within HMT or HMRC on digital taxation. And the chancellor walks in, and says, right, I want to stop all of this avoidance by digital companies. How do I do it? And the first thing I think the official would say, well, Chancellor, if you're talking about tax avoidance in the classical sense, which is where a company comes up with a scheme which reduces its taxes, which is against what we in HMRC and HMRT would think was the principle of the tax, and which we will challenge instantly and take through to the courts if necessary. If that's what you're thinking about, Chancellor, I'm afraid we've done an awful lot of stopping that already. Because, I mean, the peak tax avoidance by companies, I would say, was about 2007, just before the last crash. Post the 2007 crash, both there's been a significant amount of tax legislation, such as disclosure of tax avoidance schemes, the banking code, the general anti-abuse rule, to clamp down on that type of avoidance, and also, having worked in a FTSE 100, I think any FTSE 100 tax director that went to their board and said, I want to do one of these tax schemes, would no longer be in a job, because those companies are now so focused on reputational risk that the bottom has fallen out of that tax avoidance market. So the Chancellor, of course, is not terribly happy with that, because there's no money there. He says, well, I've just heard, though, but you know, these companies are shipping off money off to the Cayman Islands, and you know, so how can that not be tax avoidance? Well, that's what we call, Chancellor, base erosion and profit shifting. It's a slightly more complicated title. And I think Helen's already touched on this. It's the movement of tax by legal means from high tax to low tax jurisdictions. And I think it's a little bit of a dirty secret around this, really, but because base erosion and profit shifting has been going on for many years. Again, probably it carried on post the crash, and it's really governments have known about this for years, and to some extent, not only have they known about it, they've actually encouraged it. And what, from the point of view of HMRC, for example, all they would see in one of these, they would see a company paying a sum of money for a piece of intellectual property or a piece of tangible goods in some cases, or an amount of interest on a debt. And when you look at that, that falls not, you know, fully, squarely and fairly within the UK's rules, and not only within the letter of the rules, but also within the spirit of those rules. The fact that it's not been taxed somewhere else was seen as not a matter for HMRC or HMT. All they were focused on was, is it legitimate? Does it fall within our rules? Yes, tick the box, move on. When you step back from that, of course, it means that and when that's happening not only in the UK, but it's happening in the US, it's happening in France, it's happening everywhere. When you step back from that, it means multinationals, companies, have got an opportunity to reduce their tax liabilities, which is not open to the normal individual taxpayer. So that is unfair. It may be entirely legitimate. It may be almost within the spirit of the corporation tax law, but it's not fair. The good news on that, Chancellor, I think it's good news, is that since 2013, there's been concerted international efforts to stop these anomalies happening. There's been a big project called the Base Erosion and Profit Shifting Project undertaken by the OECD. They came out with 15 reports in, I think it was 2014. And since then, we have been legislating in the UK to stop this. And most of that legislation, I think, in fact, probably all of that legislation has now gone through the House of Commons. And one of the other aspects of base erosion and profit shifting is, if you're going to do that, then probably what you want to do is erode the biggest base in the world, which is the United States. And that's, if you look at what Google and Facebook and the others have been doing, that's where really they've taken all that money that's going into the Cayman Islands should probably have gone into the US. And whatever you think of Donald Trump, one of the things that he did in his latest tax reform is actually, even in the US, largely, possibly not as much as some people would like, but largely address that problem, at least going forward. It's no longer possible for the Googles and Facebooks of this world to take profits from the UK, from France, and stick them into the Cayman Islands and not have that money taxed in the US. It may not be as taxed as much as some people would like, but it will get taxed. So, but yes, I was hoping there'd be a boom. I was hoping there's a very muted boom. But says the incoming Labour Chancellor, I understood my predecessor had some proposals to do something on digital. I said, well, yes, but, and this is where it gets even more technical, and this is what Helen was mentioning about user-created value. So, where the current government position is, it's had a couple of papers on this. So, one, we're embracing, as a country, the changes brought about by digitalisation. I think it's worth noting that 1.5 million people are employed in the digital industry, and the investment last year was 6.8 billion. I think when I was doing this, I did originally do these slides for another purpose. I think it was the time when the scallop war was happening. So I just compared the digital industry to the fishing industry, which was getting a lot of interest at the time. And what the government's view on digital at the moment is, there are fundamental concerns, and the key problem is this question of user-created value. Because users are so fundamental to the business models of companies like Facebook and Google and Amazon and Airbnb, surely where those users are should be a source of value and a source of taxation to the jurisdiction where they're based. The current view is we need to get a long-term internationally agreed solution on this, but if we can't get one, it's going to take a long time to do that, and maybe we have to do something in the way of interim measures immediately. I think there will be a link to the slides. We'll get a link to these slides from our website. So I won't go into detail, but all this is saying is users are important, but it's not. It's when we're looking at users, we have to consider how much the more they use the website, the more you use the platform, the more important it is. You do have to realize a customer and a user is different. A user of Facebook is not a customer of Facebook, because there's no transaction between a Facebook user and Facebook, other than certainly no monetary transaction. Mm. And data is often talked about as being the gold dust here. I always think of data. Collecting data is a bit. I used to collect stamps when I was young, as many of us did, in those shows my age. And you could go along to a stamp dealer, and you could either buy, a set of stamps, or you could buy very expensive stamps that were there, or you could buy these huge bags of stamps, and it was probably 5 shillings in those days, but you could buy this enormous bag of stamps. And you didn't know what you were going to get. But normally, most of them would just be, the definitive stamp that you just put on a normal letter. When we used to write letters and send them to them. But you'd sort through them in the hope that somewhere in there would be a really valuable stamp. Or some people actually would sort through them and find patterns in the postmarks or things like that. So you could buy the data, the stamps, really, really cheaply. And quite frankly, what was the value to that data to the stamp dealer? His cost of collecting it. The value came from the analysis of that data later. So that's one of the issues that are around data. Longer term reform will take some time to put in place, so we'll skip over that. Interim measures, there's talk about trying to impose a revenue tax on the of a small percentage on the revenue that, say, Google or Facebook or so on derives in the UK. Issues with that are, one, determining what how you actually measure the revenue that they derive in the UK, because obviously that goes back. We want to measure the revenue based on users, but use the revenue is coming from customers, so different groups have issues around that. And the other thing is, some of the rates of that have been suggested for these revenue taxes, I mean, 3% or 5% has come out of the EU. Well, 3% of your revenue is a heck of a lot more than 3% of your profit. No. You know, most companies are earning margins of what, 10, 15, 25%. So 20% of your 20% of your profit is an awful, is a very different number to 3% of your revenue. And if you get, if that number becomes too large, then some people might even say, what's the point in the game? And it will put off competitors and so on. And the other thing about revenue tax is it's the easiest sort of tax to pass on to your customers, and take it from someone who's worked in the digital sector for the last 7 or 8 years and has faced revenue taxes in various jurisdictions around the world. That's the easiest way to solve it. If you're being charged a tax on your revenues, it's very easy just to increase your prices. Well, that's the first step you take. So, in the interest of time, I've skipped over. Right, okay, let's do that. Oh, good. So, is corporation tax the answer, is my next question. And everything that's happened, there's an awful lot been done over the last 10 years to secure the tax base, particularly in the UK, of corporation tax. Anything we do now on digital is going to just, is probably worth pursuing it, it's worth pursuing it in the interest of fairness, but it's going to be complicated and it's going to be difficult. And it's probably not going to raise huge sums of money. So I'm not convinced that it's going to, the end of the day, corporation tax is going to be the solution to this problem of fairness. What's the alternative? Well, the curious case of John Lewis. John Lewis announced a couple of weeks ago that it made had 5 billion of revenues, on which in the first half of the year, on which it paid 1.8 million of corporation tax. Now, I think if that had been Amazon, there would have been things in the press about, Amazon only pays 1.8 million of corporation tax on 5 billion of revenues. But because it was John Lewis, those headlines didn't come up, because people realised that John Lewis hadn't made any money in the first half, or made very little money, and therefore it was not paying, it wasn't paying very much tax, and that seems perfectly reasonable. People understand John Lewis's business model. They don't understand Amazon's business model so well. And also people understand that John Lewis pays other sorts of taxes, such as business rates. And when you feel that actually someone is making that contribution in that way, do we have to say, well, actually, forget the fact that John Lewis paid no corporation tax in the first half, we're still happy that they paid the right, they're paying fair amounts of tax. Perhaps we have to think about these digital infrastructure taxes. And I don't know how to constitute those, and I don't think anyone in the tax world knows how to constitute those. I think we have to start with the techies and say, well, how does your business work? And if you were designing some kind of technical tax on your business, what would it be and how would you do it? I think I have said... Oh, no, I have one more point, sorry. And that is it a tax problem at all? And this comes down to when you... There is a different business model, actually, in a lot of these tech companies than the one that corporation tax is designed to sort out. Corporation tax is based on the principle that people want to make profits. In the tech sector, you don't mind making losses for a number of years. You're not necessarily there. The model of a lot of these tech companies is to be the last man standing, and that's when you make your money. And so your desire is actually first become a monopoly and then make your money. And I think there's a question there of whether we should actually see it as much as a regulatory issue as a tax issue. Yeah. So thank you very much. I hope I can take that too.
Thank you, Glenn. That was great. So from Helen's big picture map of the world, we've had a much more focused look at corporation tax and its alternatives. And I think that was really, really